Iago Hudson, writer, actor, and director, writer of Lackawanna Blues, and I'm talking to Dave Lefkowitz on Dave's Gone By on UNC Radio.
Welcome back to Dave's Gone By on this Saturday morning. And you know that we love to do cultural things here. You know that we love to talk about theater and Broadway. And this is a perfect time to do it because one of the towering presences in, well, the last 50 years or so of Broadway theater was a playwright named August Wilson. He unfortunately passed away before getting much further than completing his 10-play cycle about the African-American experience. He would do one play for every decade of the past 100 years. But he at least completed that cycle, was working on some other stuff, and was really a great American playwright presence. And so that's going to be honored on public television with an American Masters documentary called August Wilson, The Ground on Which I Stand. You can watch it here on Rocky Mountain PBS, and of course our New York and Tri-State area listeners can catch that on WNET and other public television stations. Well, one of the people who is interviewed in that documentary knew August Wilson pretty well, had his career basically sent into the stratosphere by appearing in August Wilson's plays. He's also directed Wilson plays. He has even morphed into a personage of August Wilson himself, even though he's an actor in his own right. He's appeared on Castle on TV for a few years. He's done some soap opera work, movies, and television. And he is here with us on the telephone. His name is Reuben Santiago Hudson, and we welcome him to the neighborhood. Good morning, Reuben.
Good morning, Dave. Thank you. Thank you for having me.
And I didn't mention either that you were a featured actor Tony winner for Seven Guitars, which was the thing that really launched your career. So you're going to be on this documentary as a talking head talking about August Wilson. What's something in the documentary that you wish had been in there, but, you know, a film can only show so much. There's a time limit. What's something that you kind of wish you could have stuck in there if that had another 2 minutes?
I think the relationship with Lloyd Richards and the way that Lloyd Richards nurtured and developed the work early on and gave it a platform and gave it an arena and kind of gave August Wilson the opportunity to really feel and experience his brilliance.
As a theater critic, I would go over to the Eugene O'Neill Theater Center. It's in Connecticut, but what's the name of the, where's the location?
Waterford,
thank you, yeah. Yeah, and he would introduce every single reading of every single play that they would do in his very quiet, dignified, gentle way. And was that what he was like even in rehearsal?
Yes, he was. You know, Lloyd was very cerebral, and he was very observant. And you would say, I don't know if you'd say quiet, I'd say soft-spoken is a better way to put it. But he was an amazing man, and he gave us all, including August, a great arena explore our art and our work in the highest level.
Now, it took some time for you to actually become part of that circle. It's not as if you just went in one day, auditioned for one of the August Wilson plays, and they hired you, and that was that. You did a lot of things to just try and get on their radar. Can you tell that story?
Yeah, I pursued them. You know, I when I got to New York, I was trying to find a place to belong, and I walked into the Court Theater at intermission of Ma Rainey's Black Bottom and experienced the second half of that play, and it was life-changing, life-affirming, and it reminded me that there was a place that I did belong, and it was squarely in the middle of telling the stories of my ancestors and my people, and there was one writer who was changing the landscape of American theater. His name was August Wilson, directed by Lloyd Richards, so I was hell-bent on finding a way into that circle, into that family. And after a few years of writing notes and letters and appearing and accosting them in different places and reminding them that who I was and that I was trying to be a part of the family, I got an audition and I won a role in Seven Guitars, and the rest is history, as they say.
The rest is history, the rest is a Tony Award, and then the rest is moving on. But how did it go from, I mean, certainly actors audition, even if they win Tony Awards, they work for a certain writer in a play, and it isn't always that they're hired back for another play or to do other things. How did you become part of the fabric of other things that Wilson was doing?
Well, once I had the opportunity to be in the room with August and to really fellowship with him, as they would say, and talk with him and have breakfast with him and be in rehearsal, he found out very quickly, and I found out, that we came from very similar backgrounds and that we had learned learn from the same sort of storytellers, cab drivers and numbers men and preachers and steel workers, and the same people that had given them lessons about life had given me lessons, because I grew up in a rooming house in Lackawanna, New York. And so we had the same rhythms, the same style, the same stories, the same feel about ourselves, and we became, you know, like brothers. So he knew that I was somebody who he felt could serve his plays very well and was very familiar and intimately familiar with the plays and the characters. And I knew that he was the writer that would fulfill my hopes and promises as an actor in telling the stories and representing the integrity of those salt-of-the-earth people that are in his plays.
When was the first time that you realized that he was not going to live another 10, 20 years? I mean, was it a major shock? How did you find out that he was not...
He called me. He called me. Yeah. I was directing his play, Gem of the Ocean. He called me and told me, you know, how severe his illness was. And we just stayed in contact and we talked, and I just, you know, tried to keep him... uplifted, as we all did, and he wasn't hard to keep uplifted. He was a very strong-willed man, and if anybody was going to give a challenge to death, it would be August Wilson. So he handled it very well, and we spoke about death and mortality and art and work, and he...
Well, did he say anything profound to you about it? Did you get a sense from him that it was a struggle for him to go gently into that good night?
Well, he just basically was telling me when he was having a good day or a bad day. I didn't want to bother him too much, so I'd call him every couple weeks. And he was just kind of would give me a quick, rundown of how he was doing. Was he feeling up? Was he feeling down? And that he was, you know, up for the fight. And it was that kind of thing. But mainly we talked about art and our families, our kids, our wives, and the things that men talk about when they're in little dark corners sometimes, you know, and not being full of bravado and hubris, but just vulnerability to a certain extent. So I admired the fact that he would share some of those things with me. But one day he called and he told me that he wanted me to do his one-man play, How I Learned What I Learned, and it really frightened me. He was sick, and he told me he didn't have much longer at that point, and he wanted me to do it, and he wanted Todd Kreitler to direct it. And I wanted to say no, because I was afraid of attacking a play that he had written for himself.
And he had performed, not in New York, but he was already kind of doing the rounds of telling his stories of his life on stage as a solo, and just he wasn't well enough to bring it to New York at any point.
Yeah, he was going to bring it, and he couldn't, and he asked me would I do it, and reluctantly I said yes with some prodding and pushing and threatening from August. And so it was the best yes that I've ever given, and it took 8 years for me to come up, you know, put everything in perspective and come around with Jim Houghton at the Signature Theater and Todd, and we put it up. So that was
And I think you mentioned about that play that when he was doing it, I mean, he was still kind of in workshop mode, but also, I mean, if a story occurred to him or a particular night he wanted to tell a particular anecdote, he could switch things around. But you had to basically turn it into a memorized, complete play. You can monkey with it night to night.
No, I couldn't play with it. I just gave it the same respect that I would give Chekhov, Shakespeare, or any other play. You know, I did what was written and made it my own, but it was his words, word for word. I didn't change things. I didn't, you know, when Todd and I went into it, we did some changing of things that August would talk about himself and his wife, and, you know, we took some of those things out, but the stories were intact.
Now, you mentioned Gem of the Ocean, which is another of Wilson's plays, part of that cycle, that was on Broadway. It was not a hit. It did not run a particularly long time, and you had some issues with the producers.
How'd you know about that, Dave?
I'd do a little bit of research.
Yeah, I mean, it didn't get I didn't feel it was respected the way it should have been. I didn't think it had an opportunity to find its core audience. You know, it closed within 3 months, I think it was, and it's a dynamic play. It's in a sense a masterpiece in my estimation, and it never had the respect or time or proper. It didn't get what it needed, you know, and without having a Lloyd Richards there who could command a certain amount of more time and space.
Well, 3 months is a long time, with all due respect, 3 months is a pretty long time for a play to catch on. Sting couldn't do it without Sting on stage, you know, this season, and if Honeymoon in Vegas doesn't start making a bit more money, this musical that the critics loved is probably going to, you know, flop in a couple of weeks. So I'm kind of wondering what else you think the producers could have done aside from throw money at something that was not generating money.
You don't. You don't ever throw money. You calculatedly put money in a certain way and have a certain campaign, an advertising campaign, to address certain issues, certain people, certain places, and you bring them into the audience. If that is strategically put in place, I think you can bring in a certain audience. 3 months is not a long time for a play. Listen, put it this way.
Okay.
Gave back $750,000 to close that play. So let's be, you know, they have the right to open or close what they want. They're the producers. It's their theater. I have no objection to that. But if you take some actors and promise them if they put seats, butts in the seats, the play will run, and butts all of a sudden get in the seats, you got to look at the numbers. You got to look at the box office. I know the box office. My contract was in the box office. Yeah, it started slow, and then it came on like gangbusters. We closed two full houses. Such full houses. And we had two more, and they were only putting tickets out at 2 weeks at a time in advance, from what I understand. Yeah. And the advance was starting to grow very well. I've seen plays run at 52%, 62%, brought from Ireland and brought from England, you know, and runs 5-6 months.
True. That's true. But everything has different circumstances. I mean, I don't know. Was it the end of Tony season when did it open late in the year? Because they may not have run something in July, August that would have perhaps run better in November, December. I don't have that in front of me. I don't remember when it was physically open.
They wanted another tenant. They had another that could put another play in there and make more money.
Also, that's a stop clause from the theater owners. It's not even the producers so much, necessarily.
Yeah. I just put it that way.
Okay. No, it's cool. I'm just curious about all this because I do follow Broadway box office stuff and I write about all that sort of thing. So it's probably of no interest to my listeners whatsoever, but I'm just fascinated myself. We're talking with Ruben Santiago Hudson, Tony-winning actor, guy who was also, I mean, you know this man, you've seen him on television, he's done Law and Order, he's done movies and TV. People may know you the best if they're not theater people from Castle, where you were on for 3 seasons. And there's another time when the writers and producers had to make a decision that I guess was somewhat negative on you, but you were very cool. You were okay with that when they killed off your character.
No, well, you know, I wasn't necessarily okay with it, but I handled it with class. That's a different thing, being okay with something and the way you handle it. You know, I have no pretensions, and I don't start throwing scripts around and destroying trailers. Someone makes a decision where they think they're better off without Ruben Santiago Hudson, Ruben Santiago Hudson moves on and does something else. Speaking of which, this summer, TNT, Public Morals, Ed Burns directing and writing with Steven Spielberg producing. So, and prior to that, I was in Low Winter Sun, which was an amazing show that didn't get its due on AMC. So I didn't stop working. It didn't, you know, I would have enjoyed a person with 4 kids having a stable one show that runs 5 years and make me a millionaire, a multimillionaire, and yeah, that would have been nice. But it also was nice that I got out and explored other things and became a very prominent director in New York, won the Calloway Award, 2 Obies, and several other accolades for directing. So it gave me my directing career an opportunity to flourish, though the bank didn't get real fat like it would have if I stayed on Castle, like all those people who are multimillionaires now.
Well, 3 seasons, wasn't that enough to in syndication, or you had to be for you to get residuals every time the show's in on TV, or not?
3 years is 3 years. 8 years is what it's running now. Years, that's a big difference. 3 years gets 3 years residuals.
Yeah.
They'll run those, and they'll be dead and gone, and then it's another 5 years of residuals that'll run that Ruben does not get.
Okay.
If you add it all up, it's a big difference, you know, and this is from a person who was probably, after doing 100 plays and 20 pilots and 47 guest stars, 30 movies, I probably had more visibility than anybody, though I wasn't the star.
Mm.
So did the show get better by losing me?
I have to admit, I've seen bits and pieces. I haven't really watched Castle, so I couldn't tell you a yes or no answer. But I'm sure Ruben Santiago Hudson's fans would say, oh, no, it's gotten much, much worse.
Well,
not even worth watching now.
If there's any doubt, you go to Twitter and you put my name in and see the people from Spain and Portugal and Brazil and all the country, in Italy and all over the United States, to daily keep putting things in. Yeah. Where is he? We miss you. We love you. Oh. But it was a good experience. And like the same way with Gem of the Ocean, they reserve the right to do what they want. And for me, I don't carry it in my life as a very, very negative thing. The moment is always painful. Anytime you get a no and get kicked out of something, it's not fun. But it also gives you a rebirth into something new. So, you know, I appreciate the people at Castle as well as I appreciate the producers of Gem of the Ocean. But I have the right to have an opinion and also be vulnerable enough to be heard a little bit.
Oh, sure. Well, yeah, and that's really honest. And the fact is you're in a position for the past several years that you know you're going to work again. You're not going to just fade into the woodwork. You're going to be on the New York stage. You're going to be, your agent is going to be calling you however many times a week and saying, okay, we have this for you. We have this pilot. We have this show, blah, blah, blah. As you said, you've got another show coming up in a few months. Can I ask, in the early stages of your career, you know, when you didn't necessarily have that, when you were a struggling actor, did you ever turn down any roles that you felt were demeaning to you in any kind of a way?
Daily, monthly.
Whoa, okay.
I still do. I always did. I always knew what I wanted to do. There are roles that I play that I enjoy much more than others. There are roles that I play that I need the money, but I'll never do anything that's demeaning to my people, to my ancestors, to my family. I want my kids to always be able to look in the mirror, whether they like the role I play, the character I played or not, and say they're proud of their dad and the work that he does. And so I never do, there may be one regrettable role that I did because the producers had lied about a scene that they took out and then they put it back in. And I had turned the movie down because I didn't like the scene. We got in a big debate about putting the scene back in. And at that point, you know, I was like 2 days from leaving, and I just said, you know, okay, this was crooked. But no, I don't have any regrets of anything I've done, because every time I go on stage or I go on TV and film, whether I'm a good guy or a bad guy, I am representing a whole human being.
And other than August Wilson, do you have sort of a breakthrough theater role that either not so much as fame or money or anything like that, but something that made you think, aha, I made a step here as an actor, as a performer?
Lackawanna Blues, my one-man show. Actually, it was a two-person show. It was myself and the Grammy Award nominated Bill Sims Jr., who composed and sat on stage with me through the whole evening and played his guitar. Lackawanna Blues, which was at the Public Theater and won two Obie Awards, and then we toured it for 14 months and became an HBO movie that won accolades from the Golden Globe, Emmys, Directors Guild, Humanitas, Christopher's, NAACP Image, and on and on.
Okay.
Blues was the pivotal point in my career that launched me into a whole different era and stratosphere, as you put it, of my career. And still, weekly, people continue to talk to me about Lackawanna Blues.
I'm kind of curious when the decision was made to tape it for TV, for HBO, I think it was. I'm sorry?
Tape it, Dave. I restructured it, reloaded it to a screenplay from a stage.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, okay. But your decision at that point was to cast other people as those characters rather than play them yourself. Why did you make that decision for the taping, for the filming?
Well, I wanted to reserve the right to film the one-man show whenever I wanted to, which is in the works now.
Ah.
And I wanted to also create opportunities for my community, my artistic community. There's so many actors of color who are extraordinary, and they're not working, and I felt Lackawanna Blues would give 26, 30 actors an opportunity to work. George Wolf and I sat down and put our heads together and thought it would be great to explore it and give actors the opportunity to each fill out all of those characters, those 26 or so characters I play in the show myself. So it was a great experience seeing this and giving ownership to other actors that are really incredible artists.
Cool. And can I ask, I'm even rolling back to your college years. I mean, did you study theater at Binghamton and was it Wayne State?
Or? I have a Bachelor of Arts in Theater from University of Binghamton University. I have a Master of Fine Arts from Wayne State University, a Master of Arts from American Conservatory Theater, and two honorary doctorates.
Wow.
Buffalo State College.
I love how you just rattle off your credits. I mean, it's just you're obviously very proud of all the stuff you've done. Have you, do you ever get stage fright?
Dave, you almost said that like that was a bad thing. You should be proud of your accomplishments. You don't have to, you know, I don't boast them, But if you ask me, I'll tell you, because it's the one thing that no one can ever take from you, is your education. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I come from a rooming house in Lackawanna, New York, a rooming house with criminals, murderers, people from insane asylum, hustlers, and that's where I came up. And they all encouraged me to do great things with my life, that I was worthy to gain and to achieve great things when the society was telling me otherwise. So, yeah, I still carry the persona of a young man that grew up in a rooming house, but I also carry several degrees on my back. And so if somebody, you know, asked me about it, I'd drop it right on them. Yeah, I got several degrees. Next week I'm lecturing at Yale University. I just left Marymount. I'm headed to Northwestern University in March. I lecture all over the country. And the way I lecture is not like a doting professor, but as a guy that's a peer of theirs that came from the hood, from the streets, and got a hell of an education.
Well, what do you tell the students at Yale or wherever else? I mean, if they're already at Yale, they've got a leg up that you didn't have. But so when you do lecture, what is it about? What are you telling them to do? Just study?
I'm not the kind of guy that tells anybody anything to do. What I'll do is I'll give them an opportunity to explore some of the things I've done, how I did them, and I can tell them exactly what this business is about this day, today, how to navigate it. You know, I know what agents want to hear when you have conversations. I know how to work with directors. You know, it's a lot of things, but I can teach them anything from history to theater to acting to literature to, you know, anything they want to, you know, plus life. I teach about life.
Well, what can you teach someone? I mean, you had a very specific kind of life growing up and dealing with and getting out of where you were, but what can you teach other people about that?
Expectations. Mm. The expectations are yours. They're not somebody else's. You gotta have expectations and goals, and I teach them how to achieve those goals. I teach them what it takes to get what you need, how to deal with rejection. I could teach them anything. Yes, I had a very specific upbringing, Dave, in the rooming house, but look what happened.
Well, yeah.
I came out of a rooming house, and I got my master's at a classical repertory theater company, the Hillbury Classical Repertory Theater, the only black kid in that program at Wayne State University. So here is a boy from a rooming house that's walking down the street saying, "Hey, baby, how you doing? What's up, man?" And then I'm getting on stage saying, "There may be in the cup of spider steeped, and one may drink, depart, and yet partake no venom, for his knowledge is not infected."
Hey, who was
I do Chekhov, Strindberg, Jenné, Beckett, and August Wilson. So, but what I don't do is put on airs that I can do those things. I carry who I am with me at all times, because that's the best of who I am. Those people who I came up with, that's the best of who I am.
Can I ask, who was your favorite acting teacher?
Lloyd Richards.
Oh, okay, fair enough. But I meant back in university days, before you even got to work with him or meet him.
I have more favorite mentors
than
the acting teacher, and some of those people that were great to me was Lofton Mitchell at Binghamton, Percival Board, Don Burrows, Vaughn Washington. These people affected me in a very positive way, encouraged me and nurtured me and didn't let me fall. And my hat goes off to them, and I'm forever in their grace.
Wow. Well, it's been really graceful and delightful talking with Ruben Santiago Hudson here on Dave's Gone By. We just have another minute or two with him. I do want to remind everybody to catch the August Wilson documentary on American Masters on PBS, both here in the Rockies and, of course, back in the Tri-State area where our listeners are. August Wilson, The Ground on Which I Stand. Do you, Ruben Santiago Hudson, still have messages from him on your answering machine?
Unfortunately, the last message I had from August disappeared. I didn't realize that they had an expiration date and it disappeared. And I should have recorded it, but no, I don't have any messages now, but I do have notes. Mm. I have gifts from him. I have a harmonica that he gave me for opening night of Seven Guitars that he inscribed to me from him. I just, you know, and usually when I start rehearsals, I carry a little note that he gave me, and I'll hand it around in a quiet circle when we're holding hands and tell everybody to look at it, and then close it, don't say a word. And it kind of blesses the occasion every time I start a rehearsal. I'm doing two world premieres this year. One, Your Blues Ain't Sweet Like Mine at Two River Theater at Red Bank, which I wrote and directed, and I'm directing. And then another at Williamstown Theater Festival called Paradise Blue by Dominique Morisseau, and that'll be in July. So I got two world premieres in front of me, and I'm excited. I feel so blessed to be an artist and to be making a living doing this.
Absolutely. And do you see your path crossing with Wilson's work or his persona again?
Absolutely. I'm never going to give August up. I'm going to play August until I can't remember lines again. I'm going to play him. I'm going to teach him. I'm going to spread the word about his brilliance, about his contributions, and about his, you know, the artistry and truth in his work. And, you know, I'm forever in August's favor, and I'm forever a servant of his work.
Well, with gracious lines like that, I think that's the perfect time to wrap up our interview with Ruben Santiago Hudson. I certainly wish you best of luck with the world premieres, with all the television and film stuff that you're doing, and that continued belief in yourself. I wish we all had it.
But Dave, I just like to say this before I leave.
Sure.
Go out and see Selma. If you haven't seen Selma, it's a wonderful film. I have a supporting role in it, along with many, many very talented. I just think it's a very important and profound film right now. So regardless of what happens in Academy Sunday, go see Selma.
Go see Selma. And, of course, go see anything that Ruben Santiago Hudson is involved with, because he picks very, very well. Thank you, Mr. Hudson. Thank you so much for your time today.
I appreciate your time, and have a great day, all right?
You too. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.